Welcome to the world of dark puddings, where two dynamic mistresses invite you to join them on a journey into the depths of BDSM. In this podcast, we explore the dark play space that resides in all of our fantasies, pushing boundaries and exploring desires in a safe and consensual setting. Join us as we provide insight, advice, and personal experiences that will both enlighten and excite you. Get ready to delve into the deliciously twisted world of BDSM with your hosts, Miss Kitten and Domina Faye.
Hey, Kinky Pivots, and welcome to the first proper class in Dark Pudding Series 1. We're really excited today. It's your host, Miss Kitten, and my beautiful counterpart,
Domina Faye.
Yay, welcome, beautiful lady from Johannesburg. It's so good to have you in the dungeon with me today. And we're talking about my favorite topic. Do you want to give our listeners a hint about what we're going to chat about?
Oh, absolutely. Today we have part one of consent.
Sure, that's a word we hear often, but do we really know what it means and how do we make that work in BDSM and in our kinky relationships? In fact, in all our relationships.
I agree. I think we often completely misunderstand the word and don't really know what it means. So, Miss Kitten, can you explain to us what is consent?
Sure. Okay. So I think for most people, consent is permission. And yeah, we do. We get really good about asking for permission in the real world and in all our relationships. And we get really sneaky about asking for permission. And we've worked out ways to ask for permission so people can't say no to us. And that is coercion. And we want to leave all of that feeling of getting what we want because we think we deserve it. And we want to move to getting what we want because both parties really want to give it and really want to experience it together. So consent for me is a feeling, and it's a shared feeling. It's a feeling that sits well within my soul. And it's about creating a process of constant collaborative discovery, of working towards a goal together where we both are achieving and gaining what we want out of the situation. So it's not just asking for permission and persuading someone to give us what we want. It's about asking for permission, giving everybody all the information and letting the other person decide if that's what they want as well. And if it is, great, we move on together. If it's not, we've learned some more information about the other person and about the situation. And that information's great because it gives us platforms to build on. And the more information you have about people, the easier relationships are and the easier it is to deepen the cubic depth of your relationship together.
That sounds very interesting. And I don't think we always think about it like this. Oftentimes, I think people really think it's just a simple yes or no.
The problem comes in is I think we've all been taught and we live in a society where no is unacceptable. You're not allowed to say no to your boss. You're not allowed to say no to your boyfriend. You're certainly not allowed to say no to your mother. You're not allowed to say no to your friends. You're not allowed to say no to your partner. So we have no practice with saying no. And we're taught that when you hear a no, it feels like you failed. So you either need to work harder to get the yes, or you need to change tactics to get the yes. And that's not what consent is about at all. Consent is not just about hearing the yes. Consent is about hearing the no and being able to be accountable for that, being able to say, okay, that's more information about the person, and all information is good. You're just walking on the road of your relationship together, and the road's getting longer and you're getting to know each other better. So, yeah, so I see it like a cookie. So let's say you have a cookie. That's a good looking cookie. And I want to taste your cookie. And it's a chocolate chip cookie. And I lean forward and I put my hand almost over the cookie and I say to you, Domina Faye, can I have this cookie? you're almost compelled to say yes. I mean, I'm literally touching the cookie. Like, if I got any closer to that cookie, it would be my cookie. Like, ownership is 9/10 of the law. You don't really have an option to say no. We're in a public space. You'd look like a complete bitch if you said no to me taking that cookie right now. So because you're a good person and you don't want to say no in public and you don't want to be look like you're a shady bitch, you're going to say yes. You're going to say, sure, take the cookie, Miss Kitten. And in the back of your head, you're thinking, it was my last cookie. I didn't have any other cookies. That's all I had. So you didn't have capacity to give me that cookie, number one. I don't know what's in the cookie. It looks like a chocolate chip cookie, but it could be a chocolate chip cookie laced with a million things that are bad for me that I'm allergic to that could cause a reaction. I have no information about the cookie. So I've coerced you into giving me a cookie where I have no understanding. You don't really have capacity. And when we leave the situation, you're going to go home and think, a fucking bitch took my last cookie. And I'm going to go home and I'm going to be thoroughly ill because I shouldn't be eating all those things that were in the cookie. So it's not a good situation. And instead of finding out all the information based around the cookie and asking you if you actually wanted to give me the cookie in the first place, I've coerced you into giving me a cookie that's going to make me sick. So you can see how a very simple thing with just a cookie needs a lot more explanation and a lot more discussion. So now, and it could really end up being dangerous for both of us. You could starve to death. Okay, it's a little dramatic. You probably wouldn't starve to death, but you could starve to death from not having any more cookies. And I could be horribly sick. So the risk management side hasn't been there. We haven't negotiated it. You haven't really had much choice in the matter because my hand was nearly on the cookie, because I asked you in public. I didn't really give you much option but to say yes. And I think that's why in BDSM, the word consent is bigger for me than just permission. And I think that's why when we hear about all these amazing words like negotiation and collaboration and consent and communication, I mean, they're a bit foreign to us in the real world because we like to use words like coercion. And I think it's important that in BDSM we look at it slightly differently and we have a look at everything that we need to consent with ourselves first before we ask for permission on something. And when we ask for permission, we put our partners in safe spaces so that they can give us an honest answer back that is really consensual.
Yes, I think that is also a very important thing. When we ask someone for consent, we shouldn't make them feel that they should react in a certain way. We should actually make them understand that they can safely and honestly tell us how they actually feel about it. So we are going to be okay if they say no. We're not going to freak out. We will maybe want to try and understand the why, but we don't always have to. Because a person has the right to say no.
And so, we need to hear that no openly. And I think this is a lot of what I'm not allowed to hear no at work. I'm not allowed to give a no at work. My answer to my boss the entire time has to be yes. How much would you like? When would you like it done? What's the time frame? Like there's no option for no. And I think you need to practice no. It needs to be a skill. And hearing no is also a skill. And it has nothing to do about you. If you say no about the cookie, it's not because you don't like me as a person. It's not because you don't want me to enjoy the joy of having the cookie. There are bigger reasons and other reasons for you not giving me that cookie. And I need to be open to not taking it so personally.
Correct. I mean, I might know that you're allergic to something in the cookie and that is the reason why I'm saying no. So hearing a no from someone, it doesn't always mean that it's a bad thing.
I think it's information. I think it's information. It leads me to the next question of why can't I have the cookie? Maybe you've got a story to tell me that you don't really want to share. And by me asking that question, that that gives you an opportunity to talk about why you don't want to give me the cookie. It could be because the cookie is laced with some interesting things, or it could be that it's your last cookie and this is a personal struggle for you and you don't have capacity to give me that cookie. So just opening the floor for conversation and communication instead of putting you in a position where you have to give me the fucking cookie is really important, I think. And I don't think we're trained to do that. So I think it takes some practice.
Definitely. Ms. Keaton, you know, we talk in the kink world about consent often, and obviously it's vastly misunderstood. But do you use consent on a daily basis without kink?
100%. And I think that's the one thing that's been so empowering for me in this journey in BDSM, because I have definitely been raised in a coercion culture. All my vanilla work is from a coercion culture. There are certain power dynamics in my life that don't allow me to be comfortable or have autonomy to say no. So I feel compelled to say yes. So I'm really good at saying yes. I'm really good at agreeing to everything and then spending the next 12 hours lying awake in bed at night, running off the list of things I've said yes to that I don't really want to do. So I haven't really consented with myself. I haven't really been honest with myself. I haven't really had autonomy, control over who I am as a human being in situations. So I've needed to go back and have a look at all of that. And since I've been making sure that I'm really consenting before I use the word yes frivolously in every situation, my decisions are better. But it's a skill. Yes. It's something that has to be practiced. We're so practiced at saying yes as a trauma response because we're scared of saying no. And we're scared people are not going to respond well or not like us or not want us back or not offer us more work if we say no. That yes becomes the automatic answer, no matter if you're cutting off your left leg or selling a kidney or whatever it costs you to get to the yes at the end of the day.
So, yes, I totally agree with this. I think it for most people, it actually become a trauma response when they hear the word no, because they immediately think, okay, I did something wrong. Why is this person telling me no? And a thing that I think we really need to understand that we cannot control other people's actions because we don't really know where they're coming from or the why they are saying no for whatever reason. So by us understanding that them saying no has absolutely nothing to do with us, will make it actually easier for us to live with it, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, that no is providing more information about that person. We live so much in our own heads and our own thought processes and our own needs and wants that hearing that no provides us with a little bit more information about that person and the situation and gives us guidance about how to handle it better in the future. And that information is great information. You know, you might say no to me spanking you, but by you saying yes and you just disassociating and going through the process with me, you're not enjoying it. We are spending time together where you're not happy. I'm thinking that you're thrilledly happy. I'm going to be devastated when I find out that you weren't happy for the 17 times I spanked you before. But we could have found in that time, if I had just been open to hearing a no and you'd felt that the space was open enough to share the no, we could have found an amazing kink like needles in between. And we could have had 17 needle sessions where we could have both done something that we really enjoyed and that we really got pleasure from, instead of me thinking that you got pleasure from it, you pretending to have pleasure from it so you didn't disappoint me. I think that's what BDSM is about. It's about removing these formulated ideals that society says you have to agree with the person, you have to participate in everything, you don't. This is literally for your own pleasure. So deciding on doing things that really work for you are hugely important. And it's got to be stuff that you want to have fun with.
Yes, absolutely. I think for me in this, coming to a situation without any expectations is very important for me. I feel that if we create expectations in our head, in other words, basically running the story ahead as if the person already said yes, is so wrong, because then we come with this expectation of what's going to happen and what we expect to happen, instead of actually just coming with an open mind and saying, okay, collaborate. I'm here with you. Can we do A, B, and C? And if the person say no, you say, okay, is it no because you don't want to play at all? Or is it because you rather do X, Y, Z? So being open to that, I think, is absolutely important.
Yeah, I love that. Like I think we need to be present to enjoy the time we have with each other, and that time is best spent if we're both doing things that we really want to be there for. And I think that because you're playing with so much biochemistry and it you're heightening everything, the chance of resentment afterwards is huge. And you're going to fuck up, you're going to make mistakes. So if you're both starting from a point where you're absolutely in agreement, it's much easier to mitigate the risk and mitigate mistakes afterwards as well.
Yes. So Ms. Keaton, where does consent start for you? Is there a starting point that you can actually say, okay, this is where it starts?
So I think I see consent as a house. This sounds really, really, I think in pictures. So everything in my head is in a picture. So my picture of consent is this beautiful little house. It's really like it's in an English countryside. It has a beautiful picket fence around it. The fence is beautiful and secure. There are no loose boards. And it's nicely painted because, you know, I like neat and tidy. And then I have my four walls of my house. And probably my front wall with my door is capacity. And that capacity governs everything. We only have a certain amount of capacity for our daily tasks. We don't have more than that. It's physically not possible to do a million things in a day. Time limits us, and physical and emotional capacity limits us. And physical and emotional capacity are affected by a lot of things. They're affected by being hungry, by being tired, by substances, by stress, by anxiety, by emotional trauma, whatever you decide to say affects you, and they're different. They look different for everybody else. People handle them in different ways. But so I look at capacity from a number score out of 10. What am I emotionally today, and what am I physically today? So emotionally today, I'm about a 7.5. Physically, I'm about a 6.5. So I need to look at that, and I need to say, can I add more to my normal adult routine of getting up in the morning, doing my chores, doing my work tasks, managing all of that, coming home, cooking supper, making sure the house is clean, making sure the animals are fed, making sure that I have done all the prep that I need to do for work for the next day. So that is already in what my daily routine. Do I have capacity to add a 10K run to that? Do I have capacity to add 100 needles for a needle session to that? Is it physically possible for me, and is it emotionally possible for me? So before I even start to think about whether I can add it in or not, I have to look at whether I can make the decision. Do I have capacity to make this decision? Because when I'm tired, angry, hungry, on any substances, you're probably going to get a yes, because it's easier for me to say yes and I don't really mean it. I'm not consenting to it. I'm just trying to get you out the door so that I don't have to deal with it anymore. So, and this capacity takes practice. Like, nobody wants to be a 6 out of 10. I am a 10 out of 10 every day, but that's not being honest. So yes. I needed to start off by saying, what am I really today? What is my check-in really like? Am I really a 10? No, I'm not. I want everybody to believe I'm a 10, but that's not true. Because it's not okay to fail in my vanilla career. It's not okay to fail in my vanilla friendships. It's not okay to fail in my relationship. I have to be strong all the time. You don't have to be. You just have to be authentically honest. So instead of saying yes to everything, I look at myself and I go, do I have the capacity to do this today? Am I at least a 6 out of 10? If I'm not a 6 out of 10 for both physical and emotional, I won't say yes to anything more. I will now say, I'm sorry, I can't give you an answer to that. I will check back in with you tomorrow when I have capacity.
So at what score do you actually withdraw, can I almost say, from society to actually look after yourself?
So I have a really beautiful self-care wheel on my fridge, and that wheel consists of all the things that make me happy. And they're in like a pie. It's like a whole beautiful pie. There's like 15 different pieces. They're all different colors, and they're very easy to spot. And they contain things like a long hot soak in the bath, a walk on the beach with the dogs, cake with my friends, chat with a girlfriend, journal, music. All things that provide me with a space just to relax, just to absorb myself a little bit. And that's what I call my self-care wheel. So if I'm anything lower than a 6 out of 10, self-care comes before any decision. And yes, I will then schedule self-care into my day. So my day starts with me getting out of bed. Never a high number when I get out of bed. Mornings are still not my friend. I like to work really late into the night, so mornings have never been my friend. But I center myself and I get dressed. And then after I'm dressed, I ask myself how I'm really feeling today. How is my body feeling? And that means I have to take a minute just sitting still and checking in with how my body is feeling, how my joints are feeling. I do a lot of physical exercise, so it's important for me to do that. And I often don't do that, or I never used to. I do now. So I then decide how much I'm going to put on my day from a physical, and I give myself a number out of 10 for the emotional. If at the beginning of the day my emotionals are really already very low, I immediately look at the fridge. It's right in front of me. I can't miss it. I pick a color that works for me because it's an easy choice. When I'm at low capacity, I need super easy choices, and I make sure that my day contains one piece of that pie, whatever it is. And I make that a priority before I make any other choices. And then I will do other things for my self-care, like switch my phone off, or stay off social media, or things that mean that I'm not getting instant dopamine fixes, because I think that that's important, that I'm fixing myself. I'm allowing myself time to get back to feeling at capacity before I add other stresses.
That sounds very good, Miss Kitten. I think we should definitely look at doing a whole podcast on that self-care, because I think that's very important and something that's often overlooked.
I think we don't validate ourselves for our vulnerability. And I think learning how to validate yourself for your vulnerability is really important. And I think self-care is a step in that direction. I also think that self-care is the leading point to good aftercare, because if I know what nourishes my soul and my body, it's really easy for me to come to Domino Faye and say to her, this is what I need for aftercare, this is my process, this works for me, can we include this, is this possible? So I'm able to bring that to the table to collaborate or to negotiate, instead of sitting there going, oh, I'm fucked after this session, fix me now. And, you know, if I don't know what fixes me,
I've got no idea where to start.
No, you wouldn't. And nothing would work at that point, because I'm looking for validation for my vulnerability. I'm actually not looking to be fixed. So, I think it's a big spinning circle, because that self-care leads to good negotiations for aftercare. Great play, great aftercare leads to the next session with information about what worked. Bringing that information to the table gives the other party chance to consent, chance to agree or disagree, or that means you can then look elsewhere for that care. It doesn't have to come from the partner that you're playing with. So I think it's like a big circle, and I think the circle just gets better and better as you experience it more and more with the same people and the same players, because the trust builds, and it just allows you information, and bringing that information allows people to say yes or no. And when they say yes or no, you can either make another plan or you can decide not to do it. But having that consent up front is really important.
Is this how you would say that you can carry it forward with play partners?
Definitely. definitely. And for me, my plays are big. My stuff can be quite extreme. Recovery is difficult. So part of what I'm asking you to consent to is not just 100 needles. Part of what I'm asking you to consent to, I'm asking you if you have time in your life for this. I'm asking you if this fits into your adult budget. Do you have time to play with me on a Saturday and still go to work on Monday? Are you going to cope? Because I have to. Nobody gives me a sick note on a Monday morning. Mondays are my worst day. I want to play with the people that are responsible about that. I want to play with the people that say to me, oh, this is not a great week. I'm snowed under. I'm really stressed. Can we reschedule this for a different time? None of this is the Olympics. So knowing that they have capacity, physical capacity in the moment, mental capacity in the moment, but they're looking forward and they're saying, in my risk budget for capacity, how does this fit in? How does this work going forward? And can I afford this in my next 7 days?
Yes. Sure. That's very interesting. So, Ms. Gideon, why would you say is it important to have this between play partners?
Because you've got, why is it important to have this between play partners? That's a great question. Because I think you want to be able to look after each other, and this is all built on trust. So the more information that you can share, the more you can open the communication channels up, and the more you're talking and that you're able to experience together, the more you're able to support each other, and that support builds trust. And this is all about trust. So if you're coming to me and you're honestly telling me that this doesn't work for you, you can't do X, Y, and Z, and I'm hearing that and I'm accepting that, and we're finding we're either calibrating the play so that it's not such a big play, or we are doing something completely different, so that we're working together, it means that the cubic depth of our relationship gets deeper, and that the longevity, the length of our relationship is going to continue, because I can trust you. I can trust that you can tell me this week it's not a great week, you don't want to do this, or this is not working for you, or this has come up, or, you know, and you're sharing honestly with me, and it makes me want to share honestly and openly with you.
Yes. No, that sounds amazing. Lastly, Ms. Keaton, I think before we make this a bit too long, what would you say is the consent pillars that you would say is the most important things to remember when you are thinking consent? What does it mean to you? What is the main things to think about?
So for me, it starts with capacity. Do I even have capacity to be in this call? Do I have capacity to be chatting to you? Am I here with you? Am I able to be present? Then for me, it's autonomy. Do I have autonomy in our relationship? Can I decide what's right for my body? Or is there a power dynamic based on money, based on social standing, based on whatever that makes me not want to say no to you? Because if I don't have autonomy, this is null and void. Then I'm saying yes out of coercion, not a yes out of consent. So autonomy and capacity are really important for me. And capacity, there's one thing I want to say about capacity. If capacity is a bit like driving a car, the same things apply. If I'm not 18, if I am under any substances, I can't drive a car. It's illegal. The same works for consent. Consent is not valid if there's any substances involved, or the people don't have legal capacity to be able to say yes or no. And then the information, like we spoke about the cookie. What is in that cookie? How's that cookie made? How old is the cookie? Could be a fucking old cookie, and I don't really want it. I only want new cookies. It's the information based on that, and the information both parties are responsible for. We're going to do a needle play. You need to be coming to me with the information that you've got. I need to be coming to you with the information that I have. Information about our own bodies. The fact that you can't use alcohol on me anymore. I seem to have an amazing skin reaction to alcohol. It's great. And I can't use iodine either. I'm running out of options here. So this is information that I need to be providing you with. I need to be telling you if I'm on any drugs, like blood thinners would be hugely important before you stuck holes in me. And also like simple things like, have I eaten? Have I slept? You know, this type of information, with all the information leading up to, have I had an STI test or STD test? Mm-hmm. And here are my results. Have I had a blood pathogen test? What does that look like? Have you had a blood pathogen test? What happens if you get a needle stick? Like, do you have to panic? Do I have to panic? Just sharing the information that helps mitigate the future, I think is hugely important and helps us understand the boundaries of the situation. And then bringing into the last one, the boundaries and the agreements that we're placing in the situation. Yes, you can have a cookie, but you can have half of that cookie and only that cookie. You can't have the whole cookie. I need to be okay with that before I take half the cookie, because we've now had an agreement on this. And boundaries, what area can you touch? What area can't you touch? What tools are we going to use? How many of them are we going to use? What is the time frame that we're going to be experiencing this whole thing in? So it sounds super complex. It's quite hard in the beginning, because we don't do this in any of our relationships. We don't even do this in our work negotiations. If we did, we'd be far better off in our careers as well.
Totally agree.
we're really missing some cool stuff here that we can take into our vanilla lives. But these agreements sound super hard in the beginning. They don't have to be. You can really simplify them, and you can use explicit consent. Domfei is gonna spank my sexy ass 5 times with my cleaver. Mm-hmm. Right, so we know that's it. That's all that's allowed. She's not going to spank me with her hand. She's not going to lick my bum. She's not going to touch me with a vibrator. She's not going to do anything else. She's going to pick up the cleaver, and she's going to spank me with that cleaver 5 times. When we finish that, we've now ticked the box. So we can then have a debrief. You stop being the dom. I stop being your bottom. Notice I didn't use the word sub there. I stop being your bottom, and we then have a little bit.
I think you just missed one word though.
What?
Cheeky bottom.
Cheeky bottom. We stop this conversation. You know, we stop the play, and we go back to being friends. We have a little cuddle on the couch, because that's what we've negotiated for aftercare. We share some snacks. Snacks are always important. Number one, more important than cuddles or snacks. We share some snacks, and then we debrief, and we get a chance to chat about it. And I say, I love that. That was amazing. 5 good things about the session was. I felt safe. I enjoyed feeling the cleaver on my bum. Whatever the 5 good things. 5 bad things were this. This is what we can change for next time. When we go forward into our next negotiation, I have information. You have information. You have feedback. We can then tailor that. Because the reality is, as much as you want to be dominant and I want to be a bottom, again, didn't use the word submissive. We both want to have a good experience. And even for you as a dominant, you are only going to enjoy that experience if you're giving me what I'm enjoying.
Absolutely. I think for me, it's so important not to overstep that boundary. Because the minute I overstep a boundary that we've placed there and collaborated on and agreed upon, then I am basically breaking your trust in that moment. Next time you are going to think twice about playing with me, because I overstepped your boundary. So it's definitely something important to keep in mind and always to respect that.
It is. And I think the listeners must just stay listening, because the one thing I want to say is shit happens and the best negotiated plans always go south. So it's important Yeah, it's not if, it's when. So it's important to have a plan for accountability. and how we discuss these things together and what our debrief looks like and what we need from each other when it does go wrong. When we fuck up, what does that look like to Dom Fay? What does that look like to me? What are the unbreakable rules? What are things that you can't fuck up? What are things that are unforgivable in my life? Listen, if you put something in my ass without me having said yes, that is an unbreakable rule. I'm not going to forgive you. If you top me and you're on substances and you don't tell me and I don't have the opportunity to say I don't want to do this with you while you're high, that would be it. Our friendship would be over. If you came to me and you said you were high and I said to you, that's great, go and be high on the couch, we're not playing today, and you were okay with that and I was okay with that, that would be fine. I wouldn't have a problem. But if there was a deception about that, that is like an unbreakable rule for me. So it looks different to everybody, but knowing what you can and you can't do are also seriously important. And also, when we do fuck up, what does that look like to you? How do you want me to approach that with you? And having these discussions beforehand make the rest of it so much easier. And accountability is not, there's responsibility and then there's accountability. We need to be responsible for things we need to be responsible for. And then we need to be accountable for the things that we were meant to be responsible for and we fucked up. And we are human. We are not machines. We are going to fuck up. So what does an apology look like to you? What do you need out of the situation? And how do we approach it? I think are some very good things to add into when we talk about negotiation, which we will do at a later stage. And we'll talk about accountability.
Absolutely.
Yay.
Well, I think, Ms. Kitten, I think we've covered quite a bit of information today. And I would actually like to ask our kinky perverts to listen to this podcast, not just once, but a second time, because it's quite a bit of information that we've covered. And understanding and not just listening is what we would love you to do. We want you to not only think about other people applying this to their lives, but we want you to think of what does this look to you? Not just what this looks like to us, but what does this look like to you? And that is the most important part that I want you to take away from this today.
100%, I love that. And I think for me, and I touched on it earlier, is this idea that consent comes with information. So you're the master of your own universe. Use your frigging skills. You can all Google to find this podcast. You can Google to find out more about consent. There are amazing institutions that are talking about it. There are amazing movements that are talking about it. One I highly recommend is the Consent Academy. They are on Instagram. They are on, they have a website. They do really great one-on-one classes. I think I went to 5 of the same class before it started to sink in. And it took me about a year to understand the difference between permission and consent. And I think the more that you can solidify your foundation in BDSM, and consent for me is the foundation of it, the more life-changing this experience is and the more empowering this experience is.
Absolutely. And I think, if we apply this from the start in everything that we do in King, it will actually take away all this extra external risk factors, and we will actually have the ability to start having fun without worrying about, we didn't plan for this, or I didn't know this, what now? So you take away that constant fear of not knowing, and you can actually have fun with that person without the fear of not knowing what to do.
100%. And, when people ask me in BDSM, how do I know who to trust? I think that's taken me a while, because, I used to trust the leaders. I used to trust the hosts. I used to trust the people who stood up in the community. And now I can trust everybody because I trust myself.
Yes.
So I think I know that I'm consenting with myself. I know that the decisions I'm making are right for me. And because they're right for me, I trust myself. And I have a little bit of good experiences under my belt because I've made good decisions. Because when I haven't felt that completely embodied consent, where my body's saying yes, my mind is saying yes, and I'm in it to win it. When I haven't felt that, I've said no. And because of that, I haven't put myself into situations that induced more trauma.
Absolutely. I often tell people, you know, listen to your gut. It knows things that we don't always understand. If your body tells you a hell no, and your mind says, oh yes, that could be interesting, let's say yes, listen to your body.
100%. I love that. And I think that your body and people's energy relates differently. Like if you find that you need to be a certain way with somebody and that that's not your normal way of being, that is a big sign that the relationship is not right for you at the moment. I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm not saying that you can't do this eventually. But if you need to change to have a different energy around somebody, or they're causing you to feel like you can't have autonomy in the situation, ownership of yourself, who you normally are on a normal day, that it's probably not a great idea to get naked and give them your bottom.
100%. Thank you so much, Ms. Kitten. This was an awesome podcast, and I think our listeners can take away so much from this.
I love chatting to you, and I can't wait to be back and do part two, and just because I like being in your space. And I'm sending you all my love from Cape Town, and to all my listeners, I'm sending you all my love from my dungeon and all my kitten kisses.
Right back at you, Ms. Kitten. Thank you, Kinky Perverts. Thank you for listening to us, and thank you for taking away the information that we want you to understand for yourself. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.